Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thank you for including me in this fascinating symposium on enhancers. I love enhancers and I love to study how they work together to regulate cell fate. And what I will talk about is the function of enhancers in forming adipocytes, so fat cells, which, as Denise said, is quite relevant now that we just had such a good lunch. We need to have adipocytes to store the excess energy in a safe place. And the importance of fat cells is very clearly illustrated in cases of lipodystrophy, such as this person, which lacks functional adipocytes, well-functioning adipocyte, leading to insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, fatty liver. Those diseases are very similar to comorbidities that we find in cases with too much fat, which could seem a little counterintuitive, but the common denominator here are the dysfunctional fat cells. So having proper functioning fat cells is very important for health. And to have well-functioning adipose tissue, it's also important that we can renew our fat cells. The dogma has been that we have the fat cells we are born with, but that's not exactly right. So fat cells are removed and replenished by new fat cells, better functioning fat cells. So actually, when we increase our fat, our adipose tissue volume, we want to do it in a way of hypoplasia, where we make more new fat cells. So also in that sense, not just in development, but also as we are aging, the ability to do adipogenesis is important for health. My lab and many other labs have studied the transcriptional regulation of adipogenesis, and through a number of in vitro studies, we've learned that the adipogenesis is driven by two waves of transcription factors, a first lineage priming wave that activates the master regulators of adipogenesis that then leads to a second wave of transcription factors that activate the adipocyte gene program. And very central in this regulation is the nuclear hormone receptor, PPAR gamma. So when PPAR gamma is activated at sufficiently high level, it's a one-way street to adipocyte gland, as we tried to illustrate in this cartoon here. So if we do not have PPAR gamma, as has been shown with mouse studies, there is no development of adipose tissue. So PPAR gamma is obligate for development of adipose tissue. And even modest point mutations in the PPAR gamma gene, the coding, the coding part of PPAR gamma leads to human lipodystrophies. So there are point mutations that affect the DNA binding domain. There are multiple point mutations that lead to lipodystrophy that affect the ligand binding domain, which is activated by fatty acids and fatty acid derivatives. So sort of reading the metabolic input to the fat cell. So I'm very fascinated by enhancers, but I'm also fascinated by the fact that there are certain transcription factors that have a particular important role. We call them master regulators. Without these transcription factors, we cannot activate a certain lineage. So what makes these transcription factors, in this case, PPAR gamma, such an important master regulator? You could study the biochemical properties of PPAR gamma. We have done that. I won't talk about that today, but it does have some specific biochemical properties that facilitates its engagement with more close chromatin. And with other transcription factors, like pioneer factors that bind to more close chromatin. But what I want to talk about today is how PPAR gamma itself is regulated. So how is the PPAR gamma gene regulated? And I think this also helps PPAR gamma being a master regulator. It needs to be inactive in stem cells, and then it needs, under the proper signaling conditions, it needs to be efficiently switched on. And to study this activation, we wanted to do it in human cells, such we could also link it to human genome variation and diseases. So we wanted to study, we wanted to use a cell system that could develop from a multi-potent condition to a fully mature adipocyte. And we chose to work with cells that are derived from the human bone marrow. We telomerase immortalize them, and then we can differentiate them to become fat cells, osteoblasts, chondrocytes, myoblasts, depending on the cocktail of inducers we give them. So we can differentiate them to adipocytes by giving them insulin, an activator of PPAR gamma, dexamethasone, and IBMX, which elevates the level of cyclic AMP in the cell. So when we do that, we can see that we activate, so this is a heat map, and here we have the mesenchymal stem cells in the middle, and we can see that when we differentiate them towards adipocytes, there are a lot of genes that are changing their expression. When we instead differentiate them to osteoblasts, there are many fewer changes. And we can also see, I'm not showing you here, but we can see that there's very dramatic chromatin remodeling when we stimulate adipogenesis as compared to when we're stimulating osteogenesis. So in that sense, you can also use adipocyte differentiation as an interesting model system where there is dramatic chromatin remodeling ongoing that is important for adipogenesis to occur. So one of the questions we had, what role does the enhancer crosstalk have in this process? So several years ago, Jesper, who is now an independent PI in our institution, but he was in a postdoc in my lab, he wanted to see how frequent are enhancer and how dynamic are enhancer-enhancer interactions in this process. And he showed that there are many interactions between enhancers. These interactions are highly dynamic and they correlate with activity. So typically, when enhancers interact, they are active. And interacting enhancers are generally co-regulated. He also showed that interacting enhancers often bind some of the same transcription factors. And if they do, there seems to be some cooperativity such that there is a positive correlation between occupancy at that transcription factor at the bait and the target enhancer. And we call this cross-interaction stabilization. The mechanism behind that, we don't know, but it could have to do with what we discussed in Wendy's talk, this condensate formation, but that's pure speculation. So we also showed that these enhancer-enhancer interactions, they form enhancer communities, networks of enhancers that interact more with each other than with the rest of the genome. And we found that some enhancers are they have a lot of interactions, while other enhancers have fewer interactions. And in cases of enhancer communities with these highly connected enhancers, we can see that these enhancer communities, they are very tight, they are very much enriched in lineage-specific genes, indicating that they could be involved in activating these lineage-specific genes, somewhat like super enhancers, but they're even more enriched close to lineage-determining genes as compared to super enhancers. And we also looked at when these enhancer communities are formed, and Jesper showed that actually they're already present in the stem cell state, but then when they the cells are induced to differentiate, the enhancers in the relevant lineage-determining genes are activated, and the enhancer communities become more frequently interacting, and more enhancers move in and become part of these enhancer communities, whereas interactions are lost in the non-relevant directions. So we published this already several years ago. So what I want to tell you about is what happens to the PPAR gamma locus, and this is something we are getting ready to submit for publication now. So, and this is work driven by Mette Hyldal when she was a PhD student in my lab, and currently Anna Sednarowska, who just finished her PhD in my lab. So if we look at the TAT structure of the PPAR gamma locus in the undifferentiated cell, we can see PPAR gamma is located here. We have a gamma 1 promoter and a gamma 2 promoter, and the TAT structure is here. We can see that there are CTCF boundaries here, and there are the locus or the TAT is marked by histone 3K4 monomethylation, so it seems to be primed, but it's not yet active at the day zero state. But then when we add our inducers of adipogenesis, we see that several enhancers in the locus gets activated here at day three. When we then zoom in with our enhancer capture HiXC, we can see that there are lots of interactions in the locus already in the stem cell state. So the locus is isolated. And then when we differentiate towards adipocytes, we can see that the locus gets even more connected and more isolated. And we can see that PPAR gamma and PPAR gamma 2, I should note, because in this particular cell line, only the PPAR gamma 2 promoter, which is an adipocyte-specific promoter, is active, whereas the gamma 1 promoter is not active. So PPAR gamma 2 gene is activated when we differentiate towards adipocytes, not when we differentiate towards osteoblasts. And you can see that the genes outside the TAT are not regulated, but two of the other genes in the TAT are also induced in an adipocyte-specific manner. Then zooming in further and looking at how are the putative enhancers getting activated in the locus, we can see that at the stem cell state, there are few of the enhancers are accessible by DNAs, one, and they begin to become accessible here around the promoter at day one, and at the downstream super enhancer here at day three. And with that activation, the locus gains MET1 occupancy, so enhancers become activated by day three. And when we look at with locus-specific enhancer capture, I see how the locus gets connected. We can see that there are already connections in the locus in the undifferentiated state, consistent with what I told you, that the enhancer community is sort of established in the stem cell state, but it gets much more connected in the differentiated state here at day 10. And you can see that although there are connections here in the super enhancer, there's not that many connections to the TSS and the promoter proximal enhancers up here. they only come later. So to study the role of these enhancers, we decided we wanted to delete them one by one. So we generated a cell line with inducible Cas9 such that we wouldn't overexpress Cas9 for a very long time and risk a lot of unspecific effects. We made sure that the clonal line could differentiate as well as the parental line, and that indeed Cas9 was only transiently expressed. And then we transfected this line with various combinations of guide RNAs to excise the different enhancers. And for each enhancer, so we decided to delete 9 different enhancers, and for each deletion we made 3 independent clones at least, and we checked them all by sequencing to make sure we hadn't introduced some weird artifact. Then we looked at how are we able to activate PPAR gamma with these enhancer deletions. And here, if you focus on the PPAR gamma plot up here, you can see that there are some enhancers which affect enhancer deletions that affect PPAR gamma expression very little, but a lot of them actually, by single enhancer deletion, has a quite dramatic effect on PPAR gamma expression. And in particular, one of the super enhancer constituents, this E102, as well as the 2 promoter proximal enhancers up here. So those are the enhancers I've underlined here. And of course, with this E102 deletion, if you cannot activate PPAR gamma, you can also not generate fat cells in this in vitro culture. So when we stain with oral for lipids, we can see that the cells don't differentiate. So then we asked, so what's happening? So if we delete one enhancer, what is then happening to the other enhancers in the locus? Is their activity affected? And so here are the different deletions, and here are the effect on the different enhancers, and you can see that they affect each other quite a bit. And especially this one, E102, that has a dramatic effect on all the other enhancers in the locus, or the ability of the other enhancers to recruit mediator. So clearly, the enhancers play a non-redundant role. And it's not a sum game. It's not simply an additive effect of these enhancers. What is additive, though, is that if we integrate all the MET1 in the locus, it correlates pretty well with PPAR gamma expression. So because this was done all in a quite late state of differentiation, we were interested to see, so what if we look at early stages, how is enhancer deletion affecting the ability to recruit mediator at an early time point, to be sure that we're looking at a direct effect on the enhancers. So here I've taken out the promoter proximal enhancer plus 2 and the super enhancer constituent plus 102. And you can see here's the wild type. So if we delete this E102, it affects MET1 occupancy of all the other enhancers at an early time point. There's also a little bit of an effect here at the promoter proximal, but less so. And if we delete the E102, it has a quite dramatic effect on activity of the other proximal enhancer and less so effect on the activity of the super enhancer. We also looked at how do these enhancer deletions affect the ability of connections to form in the locus. So this is a little much to look at, but this is basically showing effects on enhancer connectivity with the different enhancer deletions at time point 0 and at day 10. And effects are marked here in color, and so the most important enhancers also seem to have the most dramatic effect on connectivity. I'm just going to show you a couple of cartoons that illustrate what we see. So here, when we delete the E102, there's not much effect at time point zero, but what happens at day 10 is that there's less interactions between the super enhancer and the promoter and the promoter proximal enhancer. And interestingly, when we delete the promoter proximal enhancer plus two, then we see again less effect at time point zero, but in an interesting very dramatic decrease in the interaction between the super enhancer and the TSS. And then there is an increased interaction between the super enhancer and the upstream enhancers that didn't seem to be very important. So that these upstream enhancers and the super enhancers seem to pinch the locus. So it seems that the super enhancer is redirected to other enhancers. So at a mechanistic level, how could this be all initiated? So we were thinking some of the transcription factors that are known to activate PPAR gamma and play an important role at early time points of adipocyte differentiation is CBP beta. And CBP beta is a pioneering type factor. It's good at binding to less accessible DNA. And you can see that here at time point zero, there's not that much binding in the locus, but then at day one, before remodeling, before we have DNA's accessibility, there's CBP beta binding to both the promoter proximal enhancers as well as the super enhancers. So way before they are remodeled. And that binding that gets stronger towards day three. So we asked, and since we had proposed this cyst that enhancers bound by the same transcription factors, that they would in a way support the binding of these same transcription factors when they interact, we looked to see whether CBP recruitment at these early time points to the locus was affected by the enhancer deletions. And indeed, we saw so. So this is the wild type. This is then the E102 deletion. And so there's of course no CBP binding to the deleted enhancer. There's also less CBP beta binding to the other other promoter proximal enhancer, and there's little effect here on the super enhancer. But if you delete the E102, it has a dramatic effect on the ability of the other super enhancer constituents to recruit C-beta. So this, I think, indicates that there is some crosstalk between the interacting enhancers at this early time point where the locus is getting activated. So probably some cis mechanism that we are not 100% sure how it works. But then we're also studying a transcription factor, right? PPAR gamma is a very strong transcription factor. So that transcription factor could feed back on its own expression. And many people have shown, including Rick Young, have shown that this is often the case with lineage determining transcription factors. So we asked that question, so how much is this enhancer crosstalk we are seeing? Can we also explain part of that by a trans crosstalk? And so we profiled PPAR gamma. It's not expressed at day zero, it's not expressed at day one. We begin, although the PPAR gamma level is very low in day three, we begin to actually see a little bit of PPAR gamma coming in on the promoter proximal enhancer, and interestingly on the E102, this very important super enhancer constituent. And then of course, as the more pipa gamma is being produced at later stages of differentiation, the locus also gets much more occupied by pipa gamma. And it's known that pipa gamma is also a strong inducer of another member of the family, CBP alpha, and the two of these, they cooperate in activating many adipocyte genes. So we also look to see whether CBP alpha is binding to the locus, and indeed it does. There's lots of CBP alpha binding to the pipa gamma locus. So this indicates that indeed there could be a lot. Some of the crosstalk that we see between the enhancers could also be driven by trans crosstalk. So, and I think the combination of that actually helps pipa gamma be a strong master regulator. So we have this pre-established HIGH community with many enhancers that can be activated in close proximity. We have this cooperativity between the enhancers and cysts that help the locus to get rapidly off the ground. And then we have the post-positive feedback activation in trans by pipa gamma and CBP alpha. So I think the combination of these factors, and not just the biochemical properties of pipa gamma, facilitates its ability to act as a master regulator of adipogenesis. So now to something slightly different. So since adipocytes play such an important role for metabolic health, and pipa gamma plays such an important role for adipocyte differentiation, if enhancers are important for pipa gamma regulation in vivo, they must overlap with some metabolic disease SNPs. So we reached out to Melina Klautsnitzer at the Broad Institute, and we're lucky to be part of this Novo Nordisk Foundation Center for Genomic Mechanisms of Disease, together with her. She did an in silico analysis. She identified 3,500 SNPs that are associated with metabolic diseases in the locus. And then her postdoc, I should say, ran informal machine learning approaches to predict and score the regulatory effect of these metabolic risk variants on both pipa gamma enhancer activity and pipa gamma 2 promoter activity, so pipa gamma 2 expression level. And these are the top 40 variants with the largest predicted effect on pipa gamma 2 signal, so pipa gamma 2 expression. And as you can see, some of these nicely overlap with the promoter proximal enhancers. There are also some here that do not overlap with any of the enhancers we identified in this study. And then there are some that overlap with some of the super enhancer constituent, including the 102. So we looked at these overlapping genome variants, and they are listed here with their predicted effect on pipa gamma expression and their predicted effect on enhancer accessibility. And you can see there are both some common variants and some rare variants among them. So one of the variants that we identified here has actually already been shown in a publication in 2017. And has been shown to interfere with a YY1 binding motif in this promoter proximal enhancer. But we found another interesting one, namely one in the E102 locus that falls right in the middle of a pipa gamma binding site. So this is a direct repeat that is bound by pipa gamma, And this is the sequence in the, this is the common sequence, and this is the sequence in the rare variant, the G. And you it's not one of the most highly conserved in the Piper gamma locus. But so we asked, what would that actually mean to the ability, to the affinity for of Piper gamma heterodimer for this Piper E? And there we made use of a recently published MindSeq algorithm that's published based on a Celix study. And there we can see that having a G variant, irrespective of whether there's a ligand for P per gamma or not, that actually would lower to about a third of the affinity if we have an A variant. So this doesn't sound so impressive, but actually if you compare in the genome, if you run an analysis of bound versus non-bound PPREs in the genome, this is roughly the difference you find for the bound versus non-bound. So we believe that this A here is actually important for Piper gamma binding to this sequence. I showed that the Piper gamma enhancers are highly cooperative and non-redundant. There's a clear hierarchy between the enhancers. This E102 seemed to be a seed-like enhancer that needs to be activated first before the other enhancers can get activated in the superenhancer. I showed that the Piper gamma locus is very dramatically induced during differentiation, and that there's this pre-established Heis community. Elaborate enhancer crosstalk, positive feedback activation from the Piper gamma super enhancer, and I think all this contributes to Piper gamma's role as a master regulator. And then for these disease variants, we found SNPs that overlap with the most important enhancers we identified in our in vitro studies, so I think this is giving credit to the in vitro study that can actually identify some important enhancers that play an important role also in human physiology. It seems, based on this variant that we found in E102, that the Piper gamma feedback activation to this particular enhancer plays a role. And I want to speculate that this feedback activation of a Piper gamma of its own locus could maybe explain why subtle effects on Piper gamma expression level or and Piper gamma function, these subtle point mutations in the Piper gamma protein, how they could kind of get amplified and have such a dramatic role in adipocyte function. And I would like to propose that really studying these enhanceropathies in the Piper gamma locus with such an important metabolic function could help us understand different metabolic phenotypes and could help us towards a personalized treatment of cardiometabolic diseases. So that's the final slide. So I just need to acknowledge work was really pushed over the finish line by Anna Sednarowska. It was started by Mette Hyllel when she was in my lab, Alexander Rauch, Jesper Gruskat-Madsen. They contributed to the earlier work, and a wonderful collaboration with Melina Klautznesser. Thank you all for your attention.
Thank you very much, Susan. Thank you so much. I still have a sort of a semantic question, but what would be the difference between a community of enhancer and an enhancer hub?
I think it's the same.
Okay.
So super enhancers are defined in linear space. I don't know about enhancer hop. I guess that could both be 3D and in linear space. But enhancer community is defined in 3D space.
And then do you think that the non 1 or 2 enhancers are there to prime the system, and once they are primed, then you come with this strong enhancer that is an autoregulatory enhancer, or?
Yeah. Do you mean in the stem cell state where there is the enhancers are not really accessible? There must be something binding there. There is some interactions between the enhancers. We have some ideas what could be binding there, but we don't know.
No, I was wondering if you can think of a single enhancer sequence that will have both a enhancer function in starting and priming the process and an autoregulatory function.
I think this 102 has. Okay. So that is the first enhancer to get accessible and get activated in the super enhancer. And it's also the enhancer that is then amplified by the people. It's binding people gamma the strongest. So I think the reason it plays both roles is the reason why it has such a dramatic effect when deleted.
Thank you very much, Susan.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.